Hello and welcome to our first edition of Across the Pond. Now I'm Elizabeth Rose. I think you've heard my voice only once before on the More Than Just Pillow Talk series, which is the only time I've been able to be out in Toronto when they've been recording them. So things that you may or may not know about me from the articles that we wrote on metanotherfrog.com. I used to live in Toronto and I moved back to West London. Other than that, I really like sex. And that's pretty much all you need to know about me. I am a card-carrying feminist, but not in the unshaven, bother boots, bra-burning era. Much more of looking for, not necessarily equality, because I don't think we are all equal in everything, but more just equality where we should be equal and superiority where we should be. I don't pretend I can lift things as well as a big burly bloke can, but I'm sure I can plait his hair quite nicely. Now, I'm going to talk a bit on this around some of the things that make me tick. I'm not used to monologuing. I'm much more used to being part of a conversation or a debate, so do ignore me if I gibber on and lose the will to live at times. But I'm going to start by talking about one of my favourite books, and really what was one of the books that made me want to start writing about sex and erotica and just about women's experiences and how girls kind of come into their sexuality. I wrote a piece a long while ago, a couple of years, on the Demure Lemas page, well worth a Google. She's a London-based blogger. I wrote a piece for her there about my experience of sort of a teenager coming to terms with, you know, budding sexuality as well as developing an eating disorder. And I think girls deal with their, in my case, middle-class rebellion and their blooming sexuality in different ways. And the book by Melissa P, which is known as 100 Strokes of the Brush Before Bed, is an international bestseller. It is a worldwide bestseller. At one point, it was actually outselling Harry Potter. And I mean, when you think about the fact this is a book that was originally from in Italian, Lawrence Venuti was actually the translator. It's beautiful. It's just fabulous. The language is gorgeous. And it is talking about the first erotic adventures and naughty things that a teenager in Italy gets up to. It's written as a diary, so it's not Adrian Mole by any stretch of the imagination, but it talks about, you know, how she's looking for acceptance and how she's coming to terms with her body changing and her own perception of self, and how, you know, she explores that through the eyes of others, and it's a series of lovers that she takes and how, you know, each of them kind of take advantage in a way of her youth and her inexperience and her wanting to please them. The book's called 100 Strokes of the Brush Before Bed. Like I say, it's by an author called Melissa P. And it's captivating. It's almost anguished in, you know, her journey. And it's one of those things that if you have friends with teenage daughters or, you know, expect to have children at any time yourself, I wish this book had been around when I was going through it, just so I wouldn't have felt quite so alone with trying to figure out what was going on and, you know, why men wanted to fuck me and if I should fuck them and what it all meant out there. Like I say, it is definitely worth an investigation, and I do hope some of you look into it. So next up, we're going to go on to movies and a whole genre of movies. It's actually quite topical with the release of Skyfall at the moment, but Bond. I fucking love Bond. It's beautiful. It is one of the best franchises, I think, that's out there. And it has its ups and downs, let's be honest. I mean, what I find interesting is with folks I talk to, if they like Bond, they like GoldenEye, or they like Casino Royale. Those tend to be the choice of what are the two considered the two top Bonds. And I think it comes down to this. If you like something that is a bit gritty and takes a bit more thinking about and has Daniel Craig wearing really, really tight, gorgeous khaki pants. See, you all thought I was going to say swimming trunks, didn't you? And I know exactly the scene you want me to say was the sexiest one in there when he walks out of the sea and all the rest of it. Yes, he looks hot. But that man looks the best man I've ever seen dressed, ever, when he's wearing those khaki pants and that nice light white shirt, just when he's getting that chip implanted in his arm. That is a sexy man. Daniel Craig, damn. Anyway, but if people like GoldenEye, it tends to be because they like explosions and gadgets and not really having to think for themselves. So if you are a GoldenEye fan, I don't apologise to you, but, you know, get a grip. Anyway. So, but the thing with Bond is I find it a very interesting sort of insight into a decade from when the movies were made. Because we've had 5 decades worth of Bond now. And when you look at them, you can really see the different attitudes that were going on at the time. So most recently, we've got Daniel Craig as a Bond. So you've got, I'll ignore Quantum of Solace, because not even I could quite get my head around that. Although the opera scene was amazing. The opera and the guns and the chase and everything. Beautifully executed and very cleverly done. And I think that's basically what the Daniel Craig Bond is. It's trying to be a bit cleverer. In the most recent one, I'm not going to give anything away, but it's a bit more psychological. It's building more of a backstory. You're learning more about him as a person. It's not about world domination. Then you have, and that's more true of, you know, the popular culture today, is you're looking for that psychological backstory. You want to know more about the people. And there isn't so much Bond girls happening necessarily. There are female characters who are intrinsic to the plot. There is not a Bond girl in any of them necessarily. I mean, yes, there is Vespa, but she's part and parcel of the original book as well. And the way they play her character out, she's quite witty, she has banter, you know, the whole, and you know, taking him to task about his watch, refusing to give him the money, all of these kind of things. Go back to the previous Bond of Brosnan, and that's where you've got the dot-com bubble years. You've got gadgets galore, everything highly expensive, all exploring the very boundaries, that stupidity with a see-through car. You also have the Americans being completely retarded and thinking they could get away with an offshoot using Halle Berry's character and using Bond in order to launch a separate franchise. That crashed and burned, didn't it? But you did see the attempt of having a female equivalent, so a co-lead, that was going to have end up having her own franchise, that she was as powerful and was there for a good reason. As you go back into the Bonds, into the 70s, when you've got kind of the Timothy Dalton, George Lazenby, those sorts of, and the end of the Roger Moore, that's when they're all kind of very grandiose and a bit bizarre, and they're, you know, it's kind of, the Cold War's pretty much at an end, but it's all a bit still quite exciting, and they're not entirely sure. They're kind of going up against drug culture and crocodiles and magicians and ex-Nazis, you know, with horse races and things like that. And there you tend to have the Bond girls who are bit parts. So they're part of the characters, like in The Living Daylights and pieces, places like that. The ones who are more powerful tend to be the bad guys, but there's lots and lots of sex going on. And it's kind of, it's around the time of women's lib going forward. Women are allowed to have credit in the US during those times. So it's more about, although they're bit parts, so they're not necessarily intrinsic to the plot, they tend to have a bit more character to them instead of just surrendering. Then we get to the Sean Connery years. Who is an outstanding Bond, but was a product of his time. This is Cold War Bond, so it's always the Russians, and the women in them tended to do mostly just sigh and take their clothes off. Even if you take the example of Honor Blackman, who played Pussy Galore, which is a fantastic character and an even better name, she didn't wish to engage in that sort of nefarious activities with James Bond. And instead, the actual scene when they have a bit of rough and tumble in the stables is in fact just that, rough and tumble. He takes her quite roughly, forces a kiss on her, and continues to force a kiss on her until she consents. And this is back to what was the common belief at the time, is that women were just resisting in order to seem pretty or playing hard to get, and that really they wanted it anyway. I can't imagine that we would see that in a Daniel Craig Bond, of this forcing a kiss, because it just, it wouldn't be on these days. It's just not given. And I mean, and if you look at the, you know, Sean Connery, James Bond, during that time of cinema, mostly it's about the Russians are coming, the Russians are coming. And then secondly, you're also seeing these female characters who are, you know, not there to lead. They're there to look pretty in a bikini, and then they're there to surrender. Or, in the case of several of the Bond girls, die horribly saving his life. Which is always good. Let's not forget the poor lady in the gold paint, in Goldfinger, who apparently died of skin asphyxiation. But anyway, that I think we've no chitter on Bond is complete without me mentioning the greatest Bond phrase of all time, which is, "Do you expect me to talk? No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die." And anyway, and I would say, just to bring this back round to the fact we are not just me rambling on about sexuality and feminism in movies, but also sex. Daniel Craig, as I say, incredibly sexy man, sexiest man with clothes on. It's that one scene. If you haven't seen it, you need to go and look at what I'm talking about, those khaki pants. Very, very nice. Okay, next up, just as I say, this is more ramblings. I was going to kind of link the two topics that I've been talking about together, which is both books, and in particular, I've mentioned one of my favourite books, and really one of my reasons for wanting to write about sex and femininity and how that impacts on people's sexuality and sensuality, which is that book, 100 Strokes of the Brush Before Bed by Melissa P. Then I've also whittled on at you about the ages of Bond and the use of female characters throughout those ages. 5 decades of Bond, who'd have thought? One man that might not have believed it was actually Ian Fleming, who's the original creator of Bond. You'll note recently it's always called Ian Fleming's Bond. And that's because a more recent Bond book, I think it's called The Devil Who Dares or something like that, by Sebastian Fox, who was the very clever chap that wrote Birdsong, another excellent book. But the Ian Fleming Bonds are genius. I mean, he did create a character, and he created an outstanding character who's lasted 50 years worth of a movie franchise. So the man had a gift of capturing the imagination. What's fascinating is the books themselves don't necessarily stand the test of time in the way the movie franchise has. However, they are well worth reading, it's sometimes just for the insight into where this all came from. So Casino Royale is an excellent book, and that does have the Vesper Lynn character, how he creates a martini, just like the Casino Royale that you'll know from Daniel Craig. There's also a Casino Royale which has Peter Sellers in it. Was it Peter Sellers? Oh, I'll have to IMDb that now. Anyway, I digress. IMDb and check that it was Peter Sellers if you're so inclined to. But Casino Royale, there is a spoof movie that was released in the 70s. And that's genius because the James Bond character, it has Mata Hari in it as well. He's a very famous World War spy. I might get Charlie to write an article about her because she was rather impressive. But the James Bond character in that really does cartoonise the Sean Connery James Bond in the way that all he's very hairy chest. Although Sean Connery, although he had a hairy chest, he was wearing a toupee in every single Bond movie. So, but the James Bond character is very hairy chest, and all he ever does to these women is he takes them in his arms and he says, "My God, but you're lovely," and they surrender and melt before him. It's really quite impressive, I've got to give him credit. But yes, that was the books themselves were, they're very much a reflection on their time. So he plays Baccarat, so Neuf à la Banque, whereas obviously the one we got played poker in Casino Royale. But the Moonraker one is outstanding. I mean, obviously the Moonraker that we know is more when the race for the moon was going. So it was more about actually putting people up there and how that was going to work for some ex-Nazi. Whereas the Moonraker book is, it doesn't quite take it to that limit, as obviously it was written long before there was a man on the moon or satellites, etc. It was more about creating a defence system through rockets. But what was incredible is the idea that the Moonraker baddies, who are all ex-Germans, well, they're Germans, but you know, they were pretending to be British. And they're all ex-Nazis, and they've been working away in their secret bunker, creating this nefarious plan. And then the plan was, once it had been executed, they were all going to sail away because they'd been working with big bushy moustache and shaved heads. And the plan was, as soon as they left, they were going to stop shaving their heads and shave off their facial hair, thereby becoming almost undetectable. Exact words from the book. How brilliant is that? The idea in the past that a man could commit a diabolical act on Great Britain, and in order to get away with it and be almost undetectable, all he had to do was shave off his moustache. Beautiful. Gotta say, those days are long gone now, aren't they? And so that's really it from me in my first Across the Pond podcast. Here we've learnt about the wondrous book by Melissa P, and I am going to keep going on about this book, 100 Strokes of the Brush Before Bed, because I genuinely think every girl out there should read it, and every guy trying to understand the girl and where she's coming from and what it is that she kind of had to deal with teenage sexuality and screwing around and getting used to her body image, all of those kind of things. Really fabulous, really well written. Then we went into the slightly lighter and crazier topic, in my mind, of Bond through the ages and how women have kind of played a part. And this is, you know, just my wibblings. I hold forth on that sort of topic quite frequently in the pub or the local wine bar after a few too many, whenever anyone is foolish enough to start me off on such a topic. And then finally, just linking the two things together, books and Bond, just a quick insight into some of the lunacy that Ian Fleming first commenced with. I'll be back in a month or so, talking a bit more about some of the things that have influenced me and why I've kind of come up with this, anything else that really sort of floats my boat. But one of these, maybe the next one, maybe the next one, who knows? I'll just keep you guessing. Definitely going to be talking about why I always quote people and who some of those people are that I'm quoting and some of my favourite ones. A particular favourite of mine is always Zsa Gabor with the undefeatable line that erotica is when you use a feather and porn is when you use the whole chicken. Anyway, that's it from me. Good night.